they've done studies, you know, 60% of the time, it works every time.
If you're good at something, never do it for free.
I'd like to be pimps from Oakland or cowboys from Arizona, but it's not Halloween.
Look, my friend, this is just where you and I differ.
Grow up, Peter Pan, Count Chocula.
If my answers frighten you, Vincent, then you should cease asking scary questions.
All I do is win, 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 no matter what. Got money on my mind, I can never get enough. And every time I step up in the building, everybody hands go up. And they stay there.
Stocks, jocks, stocks and jocks. Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now. Right now.
It's time for Stocks and Jocks.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Jim Lawler on the board. SP Futures down, 975. NASDAQ Futures down 19. They were up pretty much all night, but then there's a little hint of a warship getting turned back in the strait today somehow, and that's kind of sent us the other way here. So very difficult to figure out what the hell's going on over there. Let's just say that. SP Futures are now down 12, so they're leaking a little bit. We had gold down. What do we got? Individual stocks. Nothing crazy. The Dow, the only one that's down a bunch is Goldman Sachs, down 350, but it's also a 900-hour stock, so not much going on there. We have a interesting story. One of my sources in the metal industry. This is yet another example of what I really do hope that. And no one who listens to the show still believes that tariffs are on other people. Listens to the crap coming out of Washington, but maybe people do. I hope not. But I got a source last night that says a gentleman I know is in the metalworking business, and all their prices on anything that's carbide tipped, carbide blades. Anybody who doesn't know what that means, if you even go to Home Depot and you buy a good drill is a carbide tip, or a good a saw blade has a carbide tip. Well, the binder in there is tungsten. And tungsten is, we used to get almost all of it from China, but evidently we're trying to spread it around a little bit. But then we still get probably 26% of the imports from China. Well, evidently they raise their prices like 600% or something. But we also have what I see here on AI, which, you know, who knows if it's right or not, but I suspect it is. We also have a 25% tariff on tungsten from China. So let's see. China gets a bunch more, and Trump gets a bunch more. Just like Jay Pritzker is resisting calls to get rid of the sales tax, or at least lower the sales tax on gasoline, since gasoline was up, when I got it, Sunday was 70 cents from the last week. I paid 60 cents. $4.99 last week was $4.39. And every place in the south suburbs now $4.99. It's almost like they all locked in on that price. Which, by the way, I won't say was predicted on Stocks and Jocks, but if you go to the little thing here on CNBC or Bloomberg, wherever the hell you're looking, and you see RBOB at 3.65, which is up 6 cents, 3.65 with roughly a dollar in tax. Of course, every time that goes up, the state gets 11% more or 10%, depending on where you are. So they love it. So Pritzker loves it. Trump loves it. I think there's a difference in these creatures. I mean, there is a difference, but in terms of money, you would think that we would get rid of the tariff on tungsten. No. Or we get rid of sales tax. And oh, by the way, the sales tax on gas is also on the other tax they charge, which is even more absurd, but they're not going to give it up. So there you go, Jimmy.
Well, yeah, I mean, but this will be a new war.
Yeah, another new war.
Because the old war has ended, even though the opponent has it. So does this make it like the Hundred Years' War between England and France? It'll just go on.
Well, I mean, there are people in a group. By the way, I think I'm joining the group. It says that we didn't really have World War I and World War II. It was one war with about a 20-year break.
Ah.
I'm not so sure. There's a lot of historians that will say that.
Hey, is that John Lee? Sounds like John Lee.
It does.
That's right. You guys started early today. What happened?
We started on time today.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Be specific.
Yeah. Jimmy, I was telling Tom Saturday that when I drove, after I drove you home, it was the worst accident on the 90 right around O'Hare. There must have been 4 to 6 cars pulled over, and they weren't fender benders. They were, half the cars were gone.
Oh,
it was unbelievable. So that was my excitement for the day, for the evening. Aside from seeing you 4 or 5.
John, this goes back. This is personalities of creatures that call themselves human. When cars were safe to go 5 miles an hour, people went 9 to make sure that when you get in a crash, somebody like croaked. When they were safe to go to crack up at 20 miles an hour, people went 40. And now the cars pretty much can absorb a hit at 55 or 60. You got to go 100. I mean, the idea that we have zero enforcement of people going 100 miles an hour except to show up and close the place and try and investigate what happened. I'll tell you what happened. Somebody was going 100 miles an hour and they should have been going 60. Duh.
Yeah.
And you might want to catch them while they're going 100 before they run into somebody and kill somebody else. We don't do that. Just saying.
Yeah, it was sobering to see the accident. Let's put it that way.
Were the ambulances carting people out or what?
I think they had already left. They closed off, two of the lanes, the big trucks with the signs, a lot of emergency vehicles, but I did not see the ambulances. I think they'd already left.
Was anybody in the emergency vehicles doing anything or just sitting there?
I didn't want to increase the gapers block, so I drove by.
Oh, all right. Well, once in a while I lob an economic principle out there that is hard to comprehend, but the two things were gas prices we were talking about. Okay, now, when I was taking my theory of price class with Milton Friedman, which nobody wanted to take and he didn't want to teach, so that was always interesting, but one of the comments, somebody said, asked him one day, what's one of the most hardest principles in economics to understand? He said that in the short run, cost has nothing to do with price. And everybody looked at him like, what are you talking about? And he said, no, I said in the short run. I didn't mean the long run. The long run, obviously, has a lot to do with it. So this weekend, I was mentioning earlier that gas everywhere on the south side is now $4.99 a gallon.
Mm-hmm.
Which in the city here, it's $6 a gallon. Well, diesel is $5.99, so that's probably the more important for your everyday life than just gas. But unless you drive all day, so I'm going to say all the stations I went by that were all $4.99, every one of them has a difference in cost price of what they paid for their last tanker or two of gas. Some probably have it from 2 weeks ago, where they may be paid in the threes that are making out like bandits. Other people probably got it yesterday and are probably barely making a buck at $4.99. So it really doesn't matter. The price is now $4.99. And the other one, for those that don't know, once in a while I shop at the Restaurant Depot. I have a pass. So, and everybody I'm sure has seen the price of restaurant food, especially breakfast, go up, almost geometrically in price. To where anywhere you go, if you go, I went to a place yesterday, the omelets are still $12, but most places are $15, $17, or $20, depending on where you go. And they all went up ostensibly because of the price of eggs. Well, the price of eggs have come back down. I have not seen any restaurant cross out the $16 omelet and put a $15 omelet there. But I'm going to ask you guys, or sort of Mr. Byrne as well. I bought 15 dozen, since I cook for people in the office to relax after the show, bought 15 dozen extra large eggs on Saturday. Guess how much?
No idea.
Matt Byrne? Matt Byrne hasn't bought an egg in his life. He wouldn't know. Jim Lowell?
I'm going to go and say $65.
How about $10.50?
$10.50.
I was trying to do the math. Now here's a question for you guys that aren't
is that per
No.
The total thing.
Total.
Oh.
Now the question is, I did a quick math, and I'm not so sure my math is all that good. Freezing in the cooler at the Restaurant Depot. Which would you rather do? 15 dozen extra large for $10.60, or 12 dozen jumbo for $13? I went with the 15 dozen extra large. Just saying.
Okay, so what? Okay, Tom, you've lost me here.
You'd either get all different size eggs. You see, you got to do some of this stuff instead of just being in the ivory tower thing.
I'm really sorry, Chief, but I just go and just buy eggs. I really don't pay attention to what they are.
That's because you're a 1%er, high end sort of dude.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, but I think I interrupted you two talking about our non-war.
Yeah.
Which is
let me finish. The point is, you're not going to see, since the price of eggs have come down precipitously, because that was caused by bird flu, not by diesel fuel usually. But you won't see the price of omelets coming back down. Even though that's essentially the reason why they went up, is the point. Right?
Okay.
Well, I'm just saying
I don't know. I think I've read this somewhere. I'm not in the restaurant business, never have been, except for I was a bad bartender, a pretty crappy bartender back.
What was the name of that bar you
Hotspur, right? Hotspurs, and the disco above it was the BBC.
That's the name I cannot remember.
It took me forever to remember that. And I think that the cost of the omelet is very little about the actual cost of the eggs.
Right,
is the
right.
cost of the retail of the people and the
yep.
The rent and all that stuff. That's what makes it the cost.
Well, that's right. But the excuse when they went up was because of the eggs.
Okay. All right, fair enough.
Yeah. Now I did not remember. For those that don't remember the BBC, which I didn't until John just mentioned it, that was Doug Buffone. Well, and the shadowy figures behind Doug Buffone. Is that a fair statement? Owned.
Yeah. There was always.
What was the place before then that he owned over where Gibson's now is? Tell us the name of that place. The nightclub there. Doug Buffone was a linebacker on the Bears and a friend of mine. He traded on the trading floor for a while.
He was a linebacker in the 70s, right?
Yeah, he was like 2 years after Butkus. He probably he graduated in
Buffon was after
65. He graduated.
But he was after, he played after Butkus.
No, he was Butkus was drafted in 63 or 4. And 65, and then Buffon was 66. He was a year younger. Because they played next to each other for however long Butkus played. Anyway, that's where Mr. T was found. He was Buffon's bouncer.
It was Mr. Kelly's.
Yeah, Mr. Kelly's. But that's where Mr. T from the Rocky movies. That's where he was discovered.
It was there from the '50s and the '70s.
Yeah,
and Ella Fitzgerald, Richard Pryor, Bob Newhart, and Barbara Streisand were there. And by the way, my mom in the 40s saw Ella Fitzgerald, and she said she was some kind of blue.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Those names are a blast from the past.
I think I saw her when she was old. She had to be 350 pounds when I saw her. She was huge when she got older.
Are you getting her confused with Aretha?
Aretha. She was massive.
I think, yeah.
Yeah, she was massive.
Yeah, Aretha had a real medical problem there.
But
she really did.
But Doug, we had breakfast with the guy every day. So one night, I go to the BBC, and there's a guy in front, he's the bouncer, whatever the hell he is. And I go, hey, is Doug around? Doug who? Doug Buffone, the guy who owns the joint. He's a buddy of mine. No, Doug's not here. he was never there to anybody, but he was there for breakfast every morning. interesting
yeah,
world.
Yeah,
so
that was the tail end of the whole mob. The hardcore mob scene here, I think.
Well, except now it's back, except it's a different mob.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, but if you go to some of those places now, it's 2 in the morning, it's all the guys that had a nice night doing selling whatever they're selling.
As you know, I am your... for both of you, I'm the guy that watches all the wild YouTubers, the anti-MAGA YouTubers now.
Oh,
just
God.
They are all a Twitter, bad pun, about the fact that Daily Wire is going down the tubes. You know, Ben Shapiro's, you know, he's, and they just laid off half their people. So everybody's excited about that. What's the other side? I can just update everybody here. Oh, yeah. So the TPUSA, Charlie Kirk's, former Charlie Kirk's organization that Erica's running, they said about 2 weeks ago, they said that she canceled her she canceled the meeting, her attendance to the rally in Atlanta because of public safety. And it turns out that the TPUSA organization lied about it. There was no public safety issues. She just didn't want to show up when there was nobody there. So watching that whole side of our political spectrum kind of collapse upon itself is gratifying, I must say. You know, but these people, you know, they are these, all these podcasters are, I always will say, they are an articulate bunch. They know what their audience likes. But no, watching them go after each other.
Well, what they like is that the people, by the way, Kevin chimed in, as he always does, terrifically. Buffon was 66 to 79, so he was drafted in 60, well, early 66. So he was 2 years after Butkus. And Doug was, like I said, it was when he was down here on the trading floor, he, good friend, and kind of lost track of him, but he was on the score, and he had, when he got older, I mean, this whole thing with this football, you know, and I don't know what's going to happen. Actually, there's more concussions in girls' soccer than there are in football. Well, who knows if they count them all in football. But Doug's last few years were, like, really bad. And he had that,
yeah.
CTE. He had that pretty bad. And he, Doug was the nicest guy. He always wanted to drive his wife to work. And from what I understand, he lived over on, like, Canal and Grand Avenue. So we're talking about, what, a mile and a half downtown? He's getting lost on the way home when he was when he was on the score. Listen, he was not an old man. When he was on the score for an hour after the games the last couple of years, rumors tell me that he would actually get a legal pad and he'd write down like 4 pages of notes for his half hour, hour show, and then he'd write them all over again and over again.
Yeah.
It just was, and those guys didn't get paid squat when they played. You know, I don't think they had any kind of pension of any sort. I mean, they probably had some, but not very much. And some of the guys had a cash in there. Herb Adderley was what, Jimmy? He was on the street, wasn't he? He had a cash in his pension to get his knee fixed?
Yeah.
They never paid for it. I mean, it's football, and the way everybody's all over this stuff, I mean, it's one step above gladiators. It really is. I mean, you know, worse then than now, but still, it's not the best. And,
You know, there was a, speaking of football, there was a, I didn't read the article in the Weekend or the Sunday Tribune, there was an article about, you know, the ghost of stadium past, you know, will haunt the Bears. Not just here, but, you know, the number of stadiums that have been built that are just, you know, sucking taxpayer money are legendary in the United States, and they just keep building them. I don't want to go into the debate about whether we should or shouldn't help fund.
Well, that's
that
an
stadium,
easy debate. We shouldn't.
Well, I don't think we should either.
Okay. Well, now, in order to say that, we have to define "we." Who's "we"? You got a mouse in your pocket, buddy?
Well, we.
Yeah.
Me. Okay.
That's not necessary. Now, I'm gonna postulate out there because I'm not one of these kind of guys. But if I were to call up from the stadium authority and say, hey, you three, Jim Oakes, John Lee, Jim Lawler, and Matt Byrne, bitching about the stadium, how about if I give you the contract for the security cameras? Now, what do you think of the stadium?
I know where you're going. I'm not going to take the bet, you know. Yeah, it's, yeah, but I'm,
wait a minute, Lawler over here's got his, no. Lawler's got his hand up.
Okay,
I do,
Jimmy,
not.
Go for it.
We already know that you're trying to bait us, and neither of us are falling for it.
That's because you know I didn't get the call. But if I did, if I did, hey, wait a minute, I get a hot dog stand. This is a great idea.
Now, if I got the security contract and the hot dog stand. Now you're talking.
Well, see, now he's bargaining. That's because he was from New Jersey for a while.
Yeah.
He's like a little Donald Trump over there. He's bargaining now.
If I was Donald Trump, I would now also have to go into the naming of the stadium.
Oh, yeah.
Plus,
you want your picture on it.
Plus, I need a skybox. It better be in gold.
Yeah, plus you need your picture on it in gold.
Yes. Yeah. Or you know, instead of a statue of Halas, a statue of me.
Actually, I do not speak here just out of opinion, because some of the listeners, you know, a long time ago, sent me links to other stadiums and studies. And if you want to, sometimes if you actually want to be, when I say sober, or actually analytical about something, you need to look at something that has, you don't.
So what did they say? You saw the links. What did it say?
A lady did a research on several stadiums, and she zeroed in. A lot of them were a couple of them were in Salt Lake City. I mean, people think it's just NFL stadiums, but it's not. I mean, there was a soccer stadium and a basketball stadium in Salt Lake City, and went through the whole routine about how they didn't make any money. And so it's not just look at the soccer stadium in Bridgeview, look at the baseball stadium in Gary, the Railcat Stadium. In every single instance, the contractors make money, the team makes money, the financiers make money, and the public and the people around there get their ass kicked. Every single instance, there might be one or two where they're somewhat. I'm going to say maybe United Center is mostly privately funded. I think the stadium and the new one in L.A., Jimmy, I think that one's mostly privately funded because they sold seat leases to two teams.
Yeah, well, also you have to look at who's behind it. You know, Stan Kroenke is a billionaire. His wife is a Walton. So for them to write a $5 billion check, out what the stock
price is. Whenever guys like you wander off and say billionaires don't mind writing a check, that's why they're billionaires, because they've saved every friggin' penny. Just saying.
I'm just also saying that his wife hasn't done...
You're right, he could, but they sold... There's two teams there. Yes. They sold seat leases. They sold the seat leases, each seat twice. Right? That's where they're getting the dough. Now, I haven't heard anything about this Bears Stadium selling massive seat leases or anything like that. They're just talking about the Indiana putting up the dough.
My understanding about Arlington Heights is there's no public money to build the stadium. They just want tax.
They don't want to pay taxes. Well, they're not just for the stadium, but if they put restaurants and bars and condominiums, they want essentially a tax dodge for 30 years.
Yeah, well.
And guess what? For everybody else in Illinois, the who's Maria Pappas, Jimmy? She's not the controller. She's somebody.
She's the treasurer.
She's the treasurer.
Okay,
yeah,
she said that the taxes in Illinois over the last 30 years have gone up twice the CPI for 30 years. So now the Bears want. I mean, let me wander down this economic road for a second, even though you guys are going to be bored stiff.
This one's close to my heart for some reason.
Well, when you sit there, when everybody does this sort of thing, because I used to do this for both Allied and Pullman, whenever you decide you're going to buy something or do something or take on a project, somebody somewhere has to come up with their vision of what the future is going to be. And if you're going to buy the Cubs at $8 billion, okay, which is what I would do, but if you did, you have to look at the revenue today and you have to say, okay, what's the world going to look like 10 years from now? And if the world is totally inflated and the $100 tickets now are going to be $1,000 10 years from now, well, now that's a view that, yeah, maybe you can pay the $8 billion or five, some ridiculous number today, because you think this inflation is going to be X and $8 billion is going to be chump change in the year, you know, 2036. I mean, that's a view of the world. I'm not saying it's the right one or not, but you have to have some idea of where you're going with this. Because today's number, which is just like Jan, when I used to do this for Pullman. Jan worked for Pullman as well. If they gave me a capital expenditure study to do, first thing I have to say is, well, by the way, 5 years from now, how many railroad cars will we be building? Well, if the answer is none, guess what? It's not a good idea. If the answer is five times more than today, well, guess what? Most of the time, I came up with the conclusion that it was a pretty good project, right? So you have to have some kind of view of the world. The other also you have to do, you have to take some costs, and you have to find a way, you know, okay, we have this plant now. We don't need a new plant because it's big enough. Therefore, we don't have to buy a plant where other guys do. It gives us a competitive advantage. Well, now, if you think the world is going to be double the prices or triple the prices 10 years from now, which, by the way, is probably a safe bet the way we're going with this inflation, the first thing you want to do is hold some of your costs constant. And Maria Pappas comes out and says, in the last 30 years, it's been double the place of inflation. The first thing I do is I trap my moldy ass down to Springfield, and I say, wait a minute, I'll pay for the stadium in today's dollars, or maybe not today's dollars. I'll borrow the dough. Plus, I want you to help me borrow it cheaper than anybody else, because that's another issue. But you got to keep these taxes constant for me. So 30 years from now, when everybody else is double the price again, I'm sitting here with taxes on an empty Arlington Park when this is a vibrant community, and I'm renting out to people and everybody else, but I'm not paying the taxes. Well, bullshit on that, in my opinion. Yeah. I know why they're doing it. They're not dummies. You want to hold things constant.
I mean, this is, yeah, it's the whole thing. Also, you know, the impact on the schools, on impact on, you know, the society as a whole is just devastating.
They're going to say what? They're going to say no, it's not. Even Soldier Field, it's not paid off. Well, so what? It's a tax on people downtown. It's a tax on people in hotels. What's the difference? The whole idea is you tax people that aren't you, and everybody likes that, right?
Well, I think it's a very good point. I mean, it's a very good point. I've never been. Of course, then, you know, politically, I want your guys' opinion. Politically, I think the state's going to cave because it doesn't want any more of this stigma of being anti-business, or, you know, justified or not. And so, you know, I'm at the point where I'd love to have them here, but you know what?
Why?
You know, for nostalgia reasons, you know, I moved here in 77, you know, and you and I went to go see Bears games together and so forth. But I will tell you, I am just tired of being held hostage by these by the elite.
And this is not anything personal, you know that. If you feel that way, let's put all the people that feel that way. You know, and there's Bear fans around. I mean, a lot of our friends down here are they use the we term in Bears, and I have to keep saying there's no we in Bears between them and you. I got news for you.
Yeah.
If all those people want to be like the Green Bay Packers and send in $1,000 and get your one share of the Bears, which gets you no dividends or no tickets, if everybody wants to be dumb enough to do that, let them do it. Just don't nail me, because I'm never going to a game.
Mm-hmm.
But if that's what you feel you want to do, and it's interesting. We have a listener from Buffalo. And whenever I give this spiel, I know I'll get an email from this lady. What do you mean? This Buffalo Stadium is terrific for everybody. Who's everybody? Well, I love Buffalo. And we got money from the state. They're pissing away money and other stuff. They might as well put it in my stadium. Okay. But you can't dissuade her from that. That's her point of view. Out of all the money you're paying, we need the bills here, and we're going to pay for it. Well, who's we? I mean, so the idea that you spread what you want to do around other people, that's normal, isn't it? Right? I mean, if the people who actually watch a Bear game, I mean, this goes on everywhere. Look at the Cubs marquee station. Now, when they decided to split away from, what was the name of this one before, Jimmy? It's now Sportsnet. It was something else.
It was WGN.
No, it was on, what was the first
Comcast
cable?
Comcast Sportsnet.
Well, now they're Sportsnet, but they were something else before. Anyway, they were all on the same station. And plus, they had two or three stations, so if there were two of them at the same time, you could watch them. They decided to pull off to this marquee. But now you want to get on cable. Yeah, but the last thing the Cubs want, is for the cable company to say, okay, anybody who wants marquee has to pay $5 more a month. Oh, no. That's not what we want. We want you to put it in the the first layer, wouldn't be the first layer, which is kind of local and home shopping. We want it in the second layer, the first, where you've got Fox News and some other kind of stuff. You want it in the same level as like ESPN and Sportsnet. We don't want people having to pay specifically for the Cubs station. We want you to raise everybody 50 cents, even the people who don't give a rat's ass about the Cubs. We want you to raise everybody 50 cents and pay us. We don't want you to cause the person to pay an extra $5 and pay us, because we might not get anybody, which is the same principle that the Bears are using. Instead of saying, okay, anybody who really cares about the Bears, send in $1,000. No, we're gonna charge everybody $100 and say it's good for everybody. The formula is the same, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The last thing we want is for somebody to have to pay $2 per Cub game, because then everybody's going to go, screw that. But now if everybody's cable bill goes from $160 to $160.50, maybe you'll get somebody to dump, but they probably won't. And all of a sudden, one day, you got the marquee, right, Jimmy? You don't even know why you got it, but now you got it.
Well, you know who started it? It was the Yankees with their New York Sports Channel, or YES, New York Entertainment Sports. But the Yankees, the Steinbrenners own part of the Devils.
The Sox were on cable long before the Yankees.
No, but the Yankees were the ones who created their own cable network.
Yeah, I don't know if they were the first. They were early, but I don't know if they were the first.
They were early, but most people don't realize that the Steinbrenners had a part of the Devils. So they had more than one team.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was the thing that the marquee is struggling with, because if the Cubs are on and you're not playing the Cubs farm system, I mean, who else they have?
Yeah, nobody. I can't believe they're making money on that.
High school football, maybe Division III football, they're struggling to get this. The difference was that the Yankees network had multiple teams. They even had the Nets.
The first one here, the one I can't remember the name of, they had the Sox, the Cubs, the Bulls, and the Hawks. Were all
it
the
was
same
Sports
same.
Channel. Sports it was Channel, the original. Yeah. Original.
Yeah. Well, that's why, if you look at, everybody, harps back and forth on the Cubs and the Sox and their listenership. And everybody loves the Cubs, and the Sox are, the orphan of the area. Well, the Sox sort of did that to themselves. I mean, the history of this was back in the day, everybody knows, but if you're old enough, not everybody probably, matter of fact, probably few people know, you had a 257, which were your NBC, ABC, and CBS. Those are your national channels. In the big cities, had an independent station, Reed Channel 9 here in Chicago. So in South Bend, all you got was 257, and my buddies and I would have to go down to this bar called Samaries, because they had the big antenna where they could pick up Channel 9 from Chicago.
Yeah.
So we'd have to go down there. Drury's beard, John, how much per pitcher?
Oh, God, $2.
$1.35.
$2.50.
$1.35. Yeah. And a best meatball sandwich on earth, 59 cents. So it was really trouble to get out there, watch the Bulls. So my buddy Bill Hake and I and other people, we went like three nights a week to this bar, right, to watch the Bulls, because we were big Bulls fans back when Jerry Sloan and all those guys were playing. So we'd go down there, and all of a sudden, you got the UHF channels. So Channel 9 decides, they had the White Sox and the Cubs were on whenever they were home. And Jack Brickhouse did both teams. So I'd come home from school, I love baseball, and if the Cubs were home, I'd watch the Cubs, Sox were home, I'd watch the Sox. And all of a sudden, Channel 9 decided they were going to pick a team and have all 162 games and have this nationwide network, which is the basis of the Cubs, really, fandom nationwide. Because if you walked into a bar in Oklahoma 1:00 PM, you had a ball game on. The Cubs were on. So the Channel 9 picked the Cubs mainly because their studio was what? 2 miles west of the stadium, right, Jimmy?
Yeah.
And they just basically dumped the Sox. So the Sox went on. Went on Channel 44, which is one of the new UHF stations. Not as many people could get it, but it was there. Then Eddie Einhorn, who was with the original partner of Reinsdorf, decided he was going to go with the new cable, and the Sox were going to be on cable and not free TV. Well, the only problem with that is he did it about 5 years before the city was wired for cable. So the only fans of the White Sox, literally, were the Jamokes that lived around Bridgeport and could walk to the game, or people from the suburbs. So if the Sox were full, people would have to take the train home and drive back downtown. They totally lost their city, not totally, but they pretty much lost their city fandom because they were on cable. I'm going to say, Jimmy, you can't imagine, there were parts of the city that weren't wired for like, what, 15 years ago?
That is true.
I mean, the city was like the last part to get wired for cable.
Well, the suburbs.
No, but the city. I'm saying the suburbs were all wired early.
Not really. The North Shore did not want, the bad influence of MTV and possible pornography, or what they used to call Cinemax, infiltrating their TVs, because, as you have pointed out more than once, I grew up in New Jersey. We had cable TV in the house by 1978. We moved out here in 80. We did not, in Kenilworth, did not get cable until 84, 85.
I'm going to say the city was probably 90 or 95.
But by the time I had moved to the city in 87,
no, it wasn't
95. They had cable.
There were parts of the city. I know my parents had it in Evergreen Park long before they had Beverly, which was the city. I think the last group to get it, John, was like the Northwest Side. But anyway, there was a gap there where you couldn't get the Sox on free TV and you didn't have cable.
Well, you couldn't get the Hawks game either.
Yeah.
Well, the Hawks talk about something more important here. Sox bid for eBay. That's what I want to talk about.
Yeah, but it's all part of the same. It's all part of the same. Who gets the dough? Shoving it around and culling favor with your politicians to screw the population. It's the same subject. Right.
All right. Okay. Now I got that there. But now and that this is the thing that sooner or later we're going to put these politicians. I mean, we're the ones that vote them in, and we're the ones that don't hold their feet to the fire.
First of all, we don't vote them in. Somebody gets them on the ballot, and we have nobody else to vote for.
Yeah, and also as somebody said with the gerrymandering, they pick us. We don't pick them. I mean, it's the other side. It's the flip side of the same coin that you're talking about. It's horrific gerrymandering. I mean,
but if you go to the whatever district you're in, if you go wherever you're going, there's going to be a representative from the Democratic side and maybe a representative from the Republican side. Some places are unopposed, but say they're all opposed. What difference does it make to you if each one of them has his fat ass pockets stuffed by the pharmaceutical industry or the Bears? You don't get a choice. You're voting for the pharmaceutical industry or the Bears in either guy. It doesn't matter whether one guy acts like he's right or the other guy acts like he's left. Does it really matter to you money wise?
Oh yeah, of course it matters.
How?
I mean, but wait a minute. I think you're asking the wrong question.
No, I'm not. I'm saying...
You're saying... No, because you're asking, since they're all corrupt, which one does it matter?
I didn't say necessarily corrupt.
I'm saying corrupt. If they're stuffing their pockets from one group to another, okay? If they're stuffing their pockets from the pharmaceutical industry, or they're on the... basically, they've been funded by... What was the other industry you were talking about?
Or a sports team. Could be anybody. It could be Jeff Bezos. It could be whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. To me, to me, that's corruption. You've got a special interest that's running. Supreme Court
says it's free economy.
Yeah. I know that's what the Supreme Court says, but Tom said, for me, that's corruption. We're allowing big money. We're allowing... individuals or corporations with undue, with large amounts of money influence, aka Elon Musk, our elections. It just,
But you're
sooner or later as a country, we have to wake up about this. and quit bitching about it and actually start to pass laws.
And do what? It's not the laws. The laws are one of enforcement. I mean, I've only had, John, I'm not giving you crap, you know that, but I'm sure we have Flanagan who he can pile on. One of the couple times, only two times on the show, I've gotten a serious amount of criticism. And one of them was, I went off on a rant one day. Dr. J was still on the show. I went off on a rant one day about people should just quit bitching about what you and I are bitching about and just recognize the system we're dealing with. Every time, and I don't think Dick Durbin's a big crook. I'm sorry he's retiring. Well, he's 80, but every time some glad hander from Pfizer throws $2,000 in his left pocket and says this is the way it ought to be, the system as it is, we need to have a bunch of the listeners, but I don't want to do this, send in a check to the Stocks and Jocks lobby. And every time we send something like that, we go put $2,500 in his right pocket and say, we don't want that. Everybody called me up. The emails were ringing off the chart. Well, emails don't ring, but they were off the chart. Talking about, what's the matter with the chief? Why should I have to come up with any dough? I vote. He should know what I want. Bullshit.
Yeah, no.
How does he know what you want sitting on the sofa with a beer watching the Bears?
I mean, I agree with you on that because this has been true. I can remember in our civics class, I think in, not civics, but I read an article in the late 70s, early 80s. The biggest complaint politicians have, they said, we never hear from our constituents. We don't hear directly from our constituents.
Well, some of them don't want
to hear.
To.
Well, okay, assume they do.
Yeah.
But how many? I mean, because I think I said on the show here, I was very impressed. I was on a town hall call with some local representatives, and I was blown away how good they were. I mean, not just SPLIB, but you know, they really knew a lot about the issues, about, you know, one of them was talking about data center. They disagree with each other about data center builds. What is that going to do to the aquifer? You know, so forth and so on. If there's a fire at a data center, what will that do to the aquifer? But my going back to my point that I was, which I'm not being very articulate about, is that most politicians will tell you they really don't. They hear from special interest groups. Okay, that could be, you know, that could be us four. Okay, we're the Stocks and Jocks special interest group, but. You know, they hear from them, but they don't hear from a lot of citizens, individual citizens calling their office or sending emails or writing letters. A lot of politicians will say that, and I think it's true now.
Well,
I think we bitch and moan about it, but we don't do anything about it.
I don't disagree, except depending on their definition of hear from you might be different than our definition of hear from you.
Fair enough. That's fair enough.
I'll give you an example of one of my. Actually, you know, I'm not the world's best with, you know, when I was younger with the coming up with the line for the ladies. One night I was pretty good. Our buddy Greg, who's been on the show, he had applied for one of these marijuana licenses, and they get one, but now nobody would let him put the thing in the area where, you know, he was supposed to put it in. It was always, you know, 3 yards closer to a school or 3 yards closer to a daycare center that wasn't even registered, that kind of thing. Nobody would let him in. So he gets a couple of tickets one night, and I'm his wingman, and we went to a benefit for what's the guy's first name, Jimmy? His last name was Durkin. Not Durbin, but Durkin. And he was the Republican majority leader in the Senate here in Illinois. So he holds this little shindig out in, I think it was Burr Ridge or someplace. It was a gorgeous bar, restaurant. I might remember the place. And it was, let's just say there was one guy who was somewhat Hispanic. The rest was, it was the white guy in suits with money conglomeration, right? And we're sitting there, and I, of course, get a spot at the bar, and people are coming by. And of course he'll talk to you there after you paid to get in. I don't know if I walked into his office, I could have had the same audience with the guy. You know what I'm saying? His idea of he doesn't hear from his, he heard from us. Because Greg had paid a bunch of dough. This is so funny, John. I've told it before. People heard it before. I'm sorry if I'm boring you. That morning, I had just given a big rant about how Commonwealth Edison, I had a listener who called me up and said they work for the Citizens Utility Board and how they just fought this rate increase, but the way the law is, if Commonwealth Edison fights the Citizens Utility Group, the people they hire, the lobbyists and the lawyers, they get to add as expenses, which essentially goes towards the rates going up. but if you want to fight them, it's all on you, which is so preposterous. You know, it's insane. I mean, to most people, that makes no sense, but that's the way it is. So I'm sitting there, and there was a little gap between. I was right next to where the waiter comes up. This lady comes up, and she's drop-dead gorgeous, and she's got an outfit on that costs more than my entire wardrobe. And she says, hey, what's going on? I need a glass of wine, blah, blah, blah. And so I order one for her. You know, I was younger. I looked a little better. She goes, what do you do? I said, well, I do a podcast, and I manage money. I manage money, and I do a podcast, not in that order. And I said, well, what do you do? And I just take a swig of wine, and guess what she says? I'm a lobbyist for Commonwealth Edison. It was so hard for me to not spit the wine out. And then this, well, of course, our buddy Greg had just paid for the cocktail party. Unbeknownst to me, if you wanted to go to the dinner, it was like another $500 a person. So he had not popped.
So
not,
where, I'm sorry, where was this place?
Some bar in the I don't know the name of the restaurant. I would never go there. It was too expensive. So it was somewhere in Burridge or one of those fancy suburbs southwest. And so she says, well, are you coming to the dinner? So, and I'm sitting there. John, you wouldn't believe, because you know I'm not the quickest. I said, oh, my friend and I, we go to two or three of these things a night. We can't be staying that long. Instead of saying, we're not ponying up the jeans. What's the matter with you? But, of course, Commonwealth Edison was right there. Right there. So they don't miss a trick. So, I mean, if the people on the show want to bitch at the state about Commonwealth Edison, you got a pony up to do. And Durkin came around and talked to every single person in the place. Came around and talked to me for 2 minutes. I mean, they're good at that. So if he'd say, well, what are you here for? You know, if I would have said, gee, I'm trying to get on the air and I can't get a license and I should be able to, he'd have been all over. And guess what card he gives me? Now, Illinois also has it's everything here except maybe the governor and the lieutenant governor. And there are probably five people. What would you say, Jim? How many people in the state are full-time employees that are elected? These guys are all part-timers.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't give me a card saying that he's in the Illinois Senate. He gives me a card for his law firm.
Well, I think your listeners have heard me say, you know, when I came back 2 years ago from Asia, and I was there for a third of my professional life, and I'm 70, so you guys do the math. And I always made fun of the corruption in Malaysia, Cambodia, and you guys saw the emails I sent both of you on Scambodia.
Yep.
And it until I really started to settle in into Chicago again, and I realized we can hold our own
as far as the Supreme Court,
a corruption standpoint.
You're talking about corruption. Everybody has their own definition of it, but the corruption you're talking about here is still called legal because of the Supreme Court. It's not corruption.
Well, look, as that sage Jimmy Lawler says, corruption is like pornography. You know it when you see it.
Well, but I'm saying,
Jimmy, I had to make that joke.
No, but my point is, I mean,
I'll accept that joke.
Well, Mr. Flanagan, right, attorney, can file. But it was all started with you saying we have an election. Okay, we have an election. If both sides they can argue about, you know, one side's woke and one side's MAGA, they can go all that down that road and take people's intention. But if both of them are stone cold, paid for by AIPAC or the drug industry or something, the idea, and you're the one who started this, the idea of that guy rolling over on a Monday morning and saying, I'm going to go after the drug companies because look what they're doing, it's not going to happen. I mean, maybe if somebody else got it rolling, the guy might see the handwriting on the wall and go with it, but he's not going to start it. It's like our kind of our joke attorney general right now, this guy, Trump's former attorney. I mean, there's no way that guy's going to roll over in any kind of a case that Trump doesn't want him to. I mean, it's not like he wouldn't. I mean, if somebody pressured him to. I mean, I don't know if he's that crooked. But he's not going to roll over tomorrow and say, man, you know, I really got to make some time here to to make sure that the drug companies and hospitals charge.
So you know, let's talk about the politics. I need to step off here. But what did you guys think about in Maine? Janet Mills, the former governor, pretty respected politician, although she's 79, withdrawing from the race, and basically it's going to be between 41-year-old, progressive, quote unquote. Well, I'm reading it right here: oyster farmer, veteran, and progressive, as an insurgent campaign focused on working class against. Oh God, what's the name of the? She's an institution.
Susan Collins.
Susan Collins.
Yeah, Susan Collins. So, what do you guys think of that?
Hope he wins.
I was astounded.
Well, when's their primary?
I hope he wins too.
When's their primary?
I'm not sure there's going to even be a primary now. Well, no, of course there's got to be a primary. I don't know.
Well, Collins is a Republican, right, Jen?
Yeah, he's a Republican.
Oh, she?
She is a Republican.
But she's goes off the reservation once in a while as a Republican.
Oh, she goes off the reservation, when she gets a lot of heat.
Well.
That's when she goes off the reservation. She's voted for. She's a pretty solid.
If there's a Democratic primary coming up, why is she? Why did she get out of the race? I mean, unless she thought
she had no money. She struggled with fundraising.
Well, that's what people are influencing. Same way with the guy in Jen. Who's the guy in California? That just all of a sudden he had all the sex things that he's been doing his whole life, and all of a sudden they came to light when they
Swallow.
Wanted him out.
Yeah,
all of a sudden they came to light when they wanted him out. Right?
Actually, I think they came to light and then they wanted him out.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure.
I think
they
wanted him out. I mean, he bucked Pelosi. Pelosi, I don't think, wanted him in the gubernatorial race, and he defied her. So she destroyed it, really.
I'm not sure I buy that. I think that he had a lot of... This thing has been percolating around there for a while. And now it really came up.
But how did it come up?
Well, no, I mean, so well, no, a bunch of women started to make public accusations.
John, you could very well be true. Nobody knows the story, but it seems like if we had our buddy Wayne on today, he would say that a lot of this stuff is common knowledge, and all of a sudden, if you don't play by the rules, it comes up. I mean, Denny Hastert.
Just like
Denny
that
Hastert,
jack off from the Republican guy out of Texas.
Well, what about Denny Hastert? Denny mm-hmm. Hastert the same way.
Yeah.
And what about Fitzgerald, where they opened up the guy was running against Obama. It opened up his frozen files, right, Jen?
Oh, Jack Ryan.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, they opened up the divorce files. And find out that the the wife accused him of going to a sex club in Europe. Well, guess what? He went with her. If you go to a sex club, is that what you're supposed to do? Bring your wife? All of a sudden, if you don't play ball with somebody,
fair enough. Fair, but I mean, he did do what he did. If this is true, I mean,
Yeah, but you had the Tribune, the Republican paper at the time, fighting to get the Ryan's divorce papers unsealed so they could, sabotage his campaign and grease the path for Obama. So, yeah, but I thought right away there was something fishy about all of that.
I must tell you that it does. I mean, so once again, going back to my original statement, I used to make fun of Malaysia for their prime minister. Stealing, the IMDb scandal, stealing $4 billion. Now it's like, well, we do it. I just am shocked how corruption Illinois is.
Well, but the thing in Washington right now, and of course the MAGA people are going to go, hey, what about Biden? What about Hunter Biden? The stuff we're seeing now is absolutely dramatic. I mean, this weekend I'm reading about some drone contract to this new company that all of a sudden is partially owned by Trump's two kids. I've never seen anything like that. Never on this kind of scale. I mean, you never heard about Harry Truman's kids getting contracts. Yeah. And I mean, this is on a whole new level. What does this mean about the markets? We've got, you know, obviously that's what we're here for, stocks.
Guys, I'm going to step
off here.
All right,
take off, bud.
All right, and if, Tom, Jim, I might see you later on today. I think I've got a meeting down there.
Okay.
All right.
Let us know.
Yeah, John, it's you know, this whole episode we're talking about prices earlier, and my nephew works at the steel fabricating facility. Tell me that the China just raised their tungsten prices like 600% or something, which means they just got a notification that everything they buy, it's carbide. You know, you're not much of a metallurgical guy, but if you buy a carbide tip drill or a carbide tip saw blade or something, those are the best ones. Well, the binder to keep the carbide to something binds to something, is tungsten. And we get a chunk of it from China. So China raised their prices. Oh, by the way, there's a big tariff on the stuff coming out of China. So evidently, Xi's going to get his and Trump's going to get his. Meanwhile, we're paying for it. I mean, this whole idea that this is all for us, this is a fleecing of us. Now, 30% higher, May 1st. They told everybody, order it before May 1st. May 1st, everything's going up 30%. It has tungsten in it. That's a number, right? We're not talking about, you know, somebody coming out and wailing on the, you know, CPI is 2%. We're talking 30. I mean, gas is not up 2%. It's up, you know, 40% or 35 or something. I mean, anybody who thinks that our guys are not part of this, I mean, what is wrong with us? I mean, I don't get this. Do you?
Well, when you have us a major trading partner or something like the Chinese Communist Party calling the shots, I think you take your chances and you certainly pay your money. It's always been that way. And, you know, I've always thought that we gave away the store for very little. You know, a lot of people made out like bandits by, you know, making investments in China, saying it was good for globalism and good for the American worker and all these other lies that we swallowed. And this is the price we pay. Right? If it weren't tungsten, Tom, it would be something else. You know,
well, but I mean, what is this thing with China? We're supposed to be screwing them, yet so we're not really screwing them, because if some of our guys are involved, then we're not screwing them. I mean, all of a sudden, you know, Trump and this guy from NVIDIA seem to have some kind of they love each other or something. But we're selling those guys chips, right? And now all of a sudden, the good chips, if the government gets 10% of it, then we can sell it to them. Meanwhile, they're turning around and doing stuff. Can anybody figure out what this? People are hands are in the pie this whole way around this. I mean, I don't really understand what's going. But it's all I know is the end user, meaning you and me, are the part that goes over the fence last year all the time. And when somebody raises their rates, then you put a tariff on top of that. Okay, so Trump is now getting 25% of the 600%, right? And where's the math not work? Just like Pritzker getting more sales tax on the gas prices, same thing. Although the 25% on the 600% is more.
Now, I do think that, you know, that the UAE leaving OPEC is, I think, an underreported story in all of this, and I think has, you know, important, you know, omens for what's going to happen to OPEC and what's going to happen to oil prices and the lack of, you know, a strong cartel in that, you know, corner. So I think this is a good thing. It's not something I don't think was in the cards. I didn't see any, you know, suspicion about it coming down the pike when it happened.
Why do you think it's when OPEC started, I was in grad school. And again, since he would always knock him off topic on the course I had him for because he didn't really want to teach it. Milton Friedman said, I'm not as worried about OPEC as everybody else, because the hardest thing to do in a cartel is to maintain discipline. If the price is too high, they're going to cheat.
Oh, and of course, look, you know, remember the war in 73. You know?
Well, there was always cheating. Somebody tried to cheat. And I think OPEC is economically, if you just look at the numbers, are a shadow of their former self. I mean, the U.S., I think, used to... John, was there a time we imported 45-50% of the oil we used? I believe.
Oh, yeah.
And now it's, you know, down to almost zero. I mean, there's a lot of imports coming in and stuff's going out, but basically we're somewhat even. Now, and there's 21 countries in the world last time I checked that export oil. So OPEC is a shadow of the former self. And when I say that, I'll give you an economic reason. This is not political. But economically, you have economic power where if Saudi in 1973 were to drop, if they were to cut their production by 20%, the price of oil was going to go up more than 20%. So that's, by definition, that's economic power. They end up on top of the game. Okay, they're nowhere near that anymore. I mean, contrast that to suppose you're a corn farmer and you're really pissed at Biden or you're really pissed at Trump, and you say, screw you guys, I'll show you, I'm not going to plant this year. Okay, fine. I mean, nobody cares. I mean, what does the cost of, even if you got a huge farm, what does the cost of corn go up? 0.00001 cent? I mean, you can't affect the market. I don't think that OPEC right now, if they cut 10% or 20%, it still has headline type of thing. I don't think, certainly, it may affect the price more than the corn farmer. But no way on earth can Saudi cut their production 10% and have the world prices go up 12% and then be ahead of the game.
Yeah, but if you got, you know, disgruntled members of OPEC, you know, leaving it and not abiding by production restrictions, so that they can flood the market with their oil and make money on it, you know, what does that? I mean, that, I don't think that's, you know, was in the cards for OPEC. If other countries start to do that too, and I suspect they will, you know, OPEC ceases to have any leverage or any, you know, control over the price of oil globally.
Like I'm saying, I don't know. I think they were down kind of low then, and it makes some difference, but I don't think it makes that much difference. I don't think they had that much to start with lately.
I think it's got tremendous, you know, impact.
I think you're showing our age.
Well, I think OPEC, you know, may have, you know, be a shadow of what it once was, but you know, when nations start leaving OPEC and it's the whole thing starts to crumble, I think this is the first sign of that likely to happen.
Well,
it's a different world,
though. Well, you know, I think though, not just to be argumentative, but the amount
add to that, you know, the role of Venezuela is too.
Well, right? But there's also Libya's back online. If you read the list of people that are in there, there's all kinds of countries that are exporting oil now. So I mean, I don't know.
But if you can break the cartel, you know, that changes everybody else's way too.
I'm not saying they don't have some influence, John. I'm just saying it's been going down by the year for the last 30 years, and to the point where I'm not so sure it really makes that much difference. But it makes some. I'm with you. I just don't know how much.
Yeah, I mean, it makes a lot of difference to the UAE. That's why they're getting out.
Well, I mean, it cuts down on the amount of people in Vienna eating shrimp and drinking booze when they have a meeting. It probably hits the hookers in Vienna. Just saying.
UAE is going to, you know, I think, provide a template for other nations, too.
But, I mean, so what are they going to do? Are they going to produce more or less?
More.
Okay, so
That's why they're getting out.
Well, okay, what I said earlier makes them perfect sense. They're tired of somebody telling them you got to cut 10%. When they cut 10%, it doesn't affect the price at all. All he did was cut 10%.
Well, you got a cartel that's still trying to control what.
Oh, yeah, same, but they can't. You certainly can't control the price here very much by doing it. You can affect it a little bit, but not the same. During the Bush administration, I'll bet our production here was probably like, the field production was 5 million barrels a day. I bet we were using 10 or 12. Well, now our production is, our total production is 20, and we're using 20. There's a little bit of influence here in the sense that...
You know, we're leaving out of the whole equation here the geopolitical power that OPEC had in, you know, threatening to do stuff that would, you know, either be a deterrent or a, you know, put the kibosh completely on whatever expansionist plan somebody had, or the impact this might have, and what will OPEC do. So that, you know, the less power OPEC has and the more powers in you know, their former member nations to decide what they want to do, I'd say it's better for everybody.
By the way, I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying the reason why the guys left is because they already were kind of a shell of their former self, is all I'm saying.
Well, they couldn't make any money.
Well, that's my point. That's my point. But let's put it this way. I believe that their persona, I actually think right now that those guys' persona is how much money they have, not much oil, how much oil they have. I mean, Jared Kushner's over there making money deals. He's not making oil deals. He's getting Saudi to invest in his fund he's running through Israel. He's not getting making oil deals. He's getting money deals because they got the dough. I'm thinking that's what their influence is now, monetary as much as it is oil. So do you think the Emirates are just gonna? First of all, they have to export through the Gulf, right? They don't have a pipeline the other way like Saudi. Don't they have to export
Well, they can bypass it. They can bypass the Straits of Hormuz.
How?
They got a pipeline that runs south of the Straits of Hormuz.
I thought the Saudis were the guys that had the pipeline and they could go to the Red Sea.
Well, the UAE, I think.
I thought the one that went all the way across, I thought was Saudi. But anyway, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But the point is, it's going to make a difference. I think those guys have been a straw horse for kind of a while. Not that they aren't influenced.
They've been bad for everything, then. I mean, bad for this country, going back 50 years. Bad for politics. Bad for international tensions, all the way around bad. So anything to weaken them is a good day in my
opinion. I'm with you on that. But all I'm saying is the amount of cheating that they tolerated, I think in the last 10 years they've been a paper tiger. Is all my point.
All the more reason to get to see.
I don't mind the guys leaving, but they never included any new players either, did they? Except for Russia. Who's in the OPEC Plus? Just Russia?
No, Venezuela was.
They were.
I think Brazil's thinking about it.
Okay, but they're not. Libya and those other guys aren't in there, are they?
Libya was.
They were? Okay. So there's how many in the plus? There's a bunch of them then, not just. Well, Russia wasn't invited to the meeting last time, were they? It's hard to keep track of these guys. But, but right now they all got to be doing pretty well. I mean, at least the Emirates.
Anyway, I just think it's something to watch that didn't get much coverage, as important stuff often does not, as we know from our...
Well, Jan, I'll help you on this one. You know where you're correct. Allegedly, this weekend, I read something that OPEC has decided to cut some of their output. Well, if they do that, and Emirates says, screw you, we're raising ours, you're absolutely right, bud. But I think that's exactly
what's going to happen.
But I think they were all cheating so much before. When they said they were cutting a million a day, how many do you think even 10 years ago, how many they actually cut? What way do they have to police each other, any?
No.
Well, I don't know. There must have been some. Well, you can tell by how many ships were leaving the place, right? I mean, you could have some idea. It's could we write a history like this and how screwed up it is? Actually, John Lee sent me a book that I got about halfway through. I should read the other part of it. It has to do with U.S. History in the Middle East, and going back to basically like the day after the first oil well was found over there, we've been up to our eyeballs in that place, us and the Brits and everybody else, just because of the oil. I mean, we've done, the U.S. of A, and not that I didn't like put gas in my tank, so I'm just as guilty as the next guy, but I mean, the idea, we've been involved in that forever. I mean, the second Iraq War was for oil, right? Nobody cared about Iraqis, did they? Really? No. I mean, it's the same thing now. What about the oil? What about the oil? And is it ever going to change? Even now we're energy independent. We got a war over there. Why? Because we want to sell it for more. I mean, what are we even doing there? If Trump says we don't need it, what are we even doing there?
Well, if we could go back to for a minute or two to the Graham Plattner and Janet Mills and Susan Collins template, because that's something that's that whole design.
By the way, Kevin says they don't have a Republican Democrat. It's when it's like the mayor's election here, where they all run in the top two runoff, I guess.
Yeah, it's the jungle primary. But the Justice Democrats, which is this nefarious group, I guess it's, I've used that word before about them, but they pick vulnerable elderly Democrats who are entrenched in districts that they've kind of outlived their usefulness for, and this is how you know, AOC got in when she beat Crowley. You would have that seat for a long time and was, you know, getting up in years. And Justice Democrats said, here's low-hanging fruit. We can, you know, primary this guy out, and then we get a firebrand in there who's going to go places and will fund her to the nth degree. And all sorts of other, you know, people that followed that same you know, pattern. And that's what's, you know, going on in Maine, too, where, you know, Mills was not a charismatic figure. She had her, you know, disputes with Trump over the years, but it didn't seem to parlay into any kind of groundswell support for her, because she's not a very vibrant campaigner or anything else. So they saw her as somebody, gee, here's another one. She's governor. It should be a shoo-in for her to be the next senator if she wants it. But, you know, they picked her off pretty easily, starved her with, you know, by showing how little money she could raise. Chuck Schumer had backed her. This is a real, you know, defeat for Schumer and the old established wing of the Democratic Party. But I think now they've decided this is the way it's going to be. Well, we can back these people. We can back a Plattner. You know, you got Elizabeth Warren, you know, was backing a guy with a Nazi tattoo he can't really explain very well.
Wait a minute. Isn't the guy? Or what about the tattoos on Pete Hegseth?
What about him?
What's he get all the? He's got all the white power tattoos, doesn't he?
He has one white. Yes. It is a Crusader cross.
Ah.
That is done. It's on his chest, and it is an Aryan symbol in prison. Very much so.
Oh God! Where do we find these guys? John, if you run for senator, I'm going to check your tattoos.
I don't have any.
Well, that would be easy check, though.
By design. It's bad enough I shoot my mouth off. I don't want to parade my skin.
Well, yeah, so let me get this straight. You know, most guys have trouble finding the right girl, right? I mean, most dudes do. Girls have trouble finding the right guy. So if you find one and you tattoo her name on you, and then she blows you off or you blow her off, doesn't that cut down the field? You can only find a girl with the same name?
Yeah, unless you, you know, want to get some white out.
we should be in the tattoo removal business, I think, in a few years. What do you think?
Well, even the Nazi tattoo kerfuffle isn't my biggest objection to somebody like Plattner, who is, like a lot of other people who seem to be, you know, ascending the ranks of the Democratic Party these days. They have absolutely no political savvy or political skill or speaking ability or you name it. And they're just like crackpots that have been kind of thinly veneered. And he's like that. Tellerico in Texas is another one. And there's a whole flotilla of these people who, to me, you know, politics is the last thing you should try to get into, because you don't have any of the skills necessary to succeed at it.
Well,
but if you get enough money and you get enough doddering people on the opposite side, of course, this is a very easy thing to accomplish.
But I'm going to regale you with one of your heroes and his comments, Newt Gingrich. Newt Gingrich's response to Trump's first candidacy, or first presidency, was, it's a follow-on of the Obama presidency. He said, people are so disgusted with Washington and how it all seems to be bought and paid for, and these people don't represent you. In aggregate, I mean, individuals probably do or think they do. That first thing they did was they elected a guy who didn't have a chance to be co-opted. He wasn't there very long, Reid Obama. And he gets in, and he seems like he gets corrupted right away. So they turned from him, and they said that wasn't good enough. And they elect a guy like Trump who had never been there, thinking that maybe he can do something. And he turned out to be, in my opinion, a disaster as well. And they went back to Biden. Was a disaster. Now we're back to being disaster number four. Okay, but he says it's a follow-on of that. So it doesn't surprise me that if you have, you know, I'll pick a guy like Danny Davis, who's here in Chicago, an African-American guy, seeming like a decent enough sort and so forth. I don't think anybody can name five things that Danny Davis ever accomplished. I mean, or anything that he certainly didn't stand up against the medical community or didn't stand up against big oil or anything like that. I think he helped African-American people out and minorities out, which I, you know, my hat's off to him for that. But the idea of somebody saying, we need something different than this guy, I don't think that's a bad That to me is probably positive. Now, if Danny can beat the guy, that's one thing. But I mean, I don't think somebody saying that's not good enough is bad. Do you?
Well, the difference now is, you know, I agree completely that Obama made Trump a kind of foreordained conclusion, because you wouldn't have had somebody like Trump if you not had somebody like Obama before that.
That's I'm saying. You and Newt are very very close. You guys still go to dinner twice a week?
I'll tell you, just, you know, a sidelight to that though. When you and John were talking about, you know, how, you know, politicians never hear from their constituents, and you know, they don't know really how they feel. I've concluded, I think the only way you can make any kind of an impact is if you just clog the phone lines of a representative if you're trying to influence or to pour out your heart to about something. Because if you write a letter, you're going to have to fit it into all the drop-down menus on the website, and you can be sure that the one you want to contact them about is not on that list by design. And if you write a letter with a stamp on it, I think it goes right in the garbage.
Jen, walk in with a check. Walk in with a check.
Before Obama ever became president,
check.
What, he was senator for, 2 years, I think?
That's what I'm saying. He was considered on the outside.
Chief, well, it'd be easier with a bag of money.
I wrote 4 letters to Obama at the time, and I was always writing to people since I was a kid. Mayor Daley, or, you know, whole number, you know, whatever projects I had bugged my bonnet about. But I, you know, everyone always got an answer of some kind, usually a form letter. But I, you know, after writing to Obama 4 times when he was a senator, I never got a reply to any of them. So this is a guy who's got franking privileges. He's got a staff of people who don't do anything but, you know, print letters and lick envelopes and run them through the postage meter. And he couldn't even do that. So right away, I got a sinking feeling, what's this guy going to do when he's president? Is he going to be any more responsive?
He was entitled. He kept shoved in there by somebody. Valerie Jarrett or somebody.
I mean, still entitled, Tom. People will not admit what a disaster he was. You know,
I don't know. I don't think he was that big.
The city financially with his
I don't think he was that big of a disaster. Plus, in terms of being a...
Setting back racial relations by a generation or two, I think is a pretty bad legacy.
Well, what? Just because white people didn't want a black person in there?
No, because they voted him in twice. And we have worse relations now than we did in his first term.
Well, I mean, because
I hold him entirely responsible. Well,
not the racist that came after.
No, but the racist that he appointed as his attorney general, the racist he had in his department, his own lack of regard for anybody beyond his own nose.
Well, you're not going to get me to argue about that. This whole idea I don't think anybody should do that. I don't think somebody who's African American should only have African American people around
him.
But
that was his design.
Trump does the same thing. Trump only puts idolaters around him. Worse. I mean, that's what people are doing now. I don't agree with that. I never did. I think he should put the best people around him. I don't care what they look like. I mean, that's me, but neither you and I are there, are we?
Well, I think Trump was a far more positive influence
on what?
Race relations than Obama was.
Oh, God. If you're Hispanic, throw you in jail?
His African-American support has been climbing.
Not anymore.
Not anymore since when?
Oh, John, don't...
You're looking at different polls from me, Tom.
Oh, look, yeah, you're looking at the ones on Newsmax, but the...
I don't watch Newsmax, Tom. I don't have cable.
Why not?
Why would I want cable?
Don't tell me you've got one of those systems that you get it for free.
I don't watch any of that crap, Tom.
Well, you're hearing about it. Anyway... What is it?
More than I do.
What's this? It's because I go places where they have it on.
Yeah, well, I'm saying I avoid places that have them.
Speaking of which, I was going to say I unfortunately was at not for me but for somebody. I was in an emergency room. Everything worked out fine. Saturday night, I never watch TV from 2 to 3 in the morning. God, Jen, everything is about a ramp getting you upstairs, a new shot. The only people who watch TV in the middle of the night are old people. Every commercial was for people who are 90 years old.
Daytime TV is just as bad, Tom.
I never watched that.
They've decided the only people who, you know, watch TV out of an antenna the way I do, except when I'm streaming something, which is not all that often. But the only people who do that are either, you know, 1 foot in the grave, or they're already, you know, trying to figure out how they can bury themselves without charging their kids for the bill.
Charge the kids? What the hell?
Or worse, the pharmaceuticals. You know.
Well, you're not a member of the. Was it the book? Was it Die Broke? Remember that? It had to be like
about the what you spent on your last hospital stay.
No, the last check you write should be the Undertaker, and you don't care if it bounces. Oh. Anyway, so what do you think? I mean, we've been talking a lot. We'll try and tie it together here for a few minutes if there's anything to tie together. The policies, and again, it's not just this administration. The policies are we're going to continue to pound porn money in. That's why you have the Bears wanting to stay. It's why you want all this stuff is the money that's flying to the upper end of the chain is dramatic. Now, the question is, can it last? And when it doesn't, if it doesn't, what happens? Is it the rest of the people revolt, as some people think, when they finally say enough, enough? I mean, somebody told me that Elon Musk last year, what did they pay him? What was his salary last year? Was it how many billion dollars or something? But I mean, and the company refuses to pay a 5-cent dividend. When does the board say, "Hey, God, enough, Elon, we got to pay our shareholders something"?
Well, that's the new model, Tom.
Well, okay, but it's not really a new model. I mean, I'm sure Vanderbilt didn't pay to, I mean, being selfish is not a new model. People have been selfish since there were people. But how does the board approve that?
I would say the corporations that pay dividends are, what percentage of corporations pay dividends?
Oh, well, a lot of them still. A real lot of them. I mean, I don't know how significant they are. I mean, in terms of salaries for people inside. I mean, Commonwealth Edison will pay a dividend. Now, would they rather pay a raise to the guy up top than a dividend? I think we both know the answer to that. But the boards are supposed to deal with that. Anyway, they don't. Well, I guess my point is, I don't know that we've had this happen in the world before, where all the money went to some people, and usually there was some sort of a problem near the end, whether it was a crash of 29 or a revolution or something. I really don't want to see a revolution here, but I mean it's separating by. I mean, how much longer can the market go up every day with inflation and everything screwing all the rest of the people? I mean, and what happens when it doesn't? I mean, you have interest rates that are creeping up, and then every time they do, the Fed seems to run out and buy bonds and knocks them back down again, which means their balance sheet goes up, and the cycle keeps going. But since it's gone on so long, I can understand why people feel that it can go on forever. I also know that it probably can't go on forever. So where do you come with that? I mean, I don't know. I mean, where does, at some point, do you want to get out of the market or not? Or, I mean, every time somebody wants to get out, it seems like it goes up again. So, I mean, we've had our second major, I'd say, problem in the world in the last 10 years, one being COVID, now being this war. And in both times, the market's gone straight up. I mean, it's so counterintelligent, but yet it happens. And would I bet against the market tomorrow? Hell no. But by the same token, I'm sitting there going, boy, there's a cliff someplace here. As somebody who's not doing this all day long and maybe is blinded by it, what do you think?
I think there's so few places you can put your money, assuming you have any, and you want to, make it work for you. Can anybody today in a realistic setting start a business, no matter how much money you have? Can you fight all the regulatory BS in your way? Can you, bank on a customer base that's going to, come into your store, go online, visit your... I just don't think there's any way you can substitute what you can make out of the market in any other kind of private.
Well, but I mean,
unless you've got tons of government money being thrown at you because of your gender or your race or something. That's the way it was for a long time. And those got preferences, and anybody else.
How come you can say it's thrown at you because of your gender or your race, and right now you're not being thrown at you because you know Trump? Same thing. Look at the investment his kids are in. That's insane. Well, but you're right. It's preference. Would somebody? I mean, how well is Hal?
You shouldn't have to find a friend of the president to open a business.
Well, no kidding. But look what Hal's.
But you can't find a friend anywhere, Tom, if you want to open a business in Chicago.
No. Well, I mean, how much? I'm really stunned at how much Hal has opened my feeble brain out, in terms of how endemic this has become, with the idea of that people. I mean, We've been talking, John, since you've been on, and forever, about how it seems like it's harder and harder for somebody who's starting a plumbing business to get financing versus somebody else. And by the way, what you mentioned earlier, where else can you put your money? The rates on a 30-year and 10-year, let's not go 30-year, it's a long time. The rates on the 10-year got down to like, what, 1.5%? Now they're up to, you know, 4.5%. You would think if you were to give, if you were to tell a first-year economics student your rates went from 1.5% to 4.5%, what would that do to the stock market? The answer wouldn't be triple. You know, there is a place to put your money now. You're not going to make 10% a year, but people are convinced the market is worth 7 to 10 to 15% a year. I can tell you 2 decades that I've been in the business when the stock market wasn't up on the decade. Okay, but if you say that to somebody now, they look at it and say, "How old is that guy? 150?" I mean, the idea that you're right. There's less of a place to put your money if you think the market's going to constantly owe you 10% a year.
Well, wouldn't it be nice though if you had the chance to say, "I want to open a restaurant, and I expect to make money, and I'll work my tail off to make sure it happens, and I'll have everybody in my family doing it."
Trying to find
the people you have in your family today. You're not going to get the restaurant license. You're not going to get it.
Oh, you can get all that. Anymore. You get all that. The question is, well, were you not getting any financing? The Hispanic group that owns the place of Water and I going on just to help them out because the food's delicious. It's on Archery Avenue. The restaurant happens to have like a living quarters in the back, and that's where they live. And the whole family works there. Food's delicious. Place is clean as hell. I don't know how it's clean. I don't know how clean hell is. Hopefully, I won't check it out one of these days. I don't ever gonna report out of how things are clean in hell, John. But the
we're already living in it.
Yeah, we're already living in it. But I mean, it's got to be all family money. I doubt if they got a loan. I don't know if anybody give them one.
Tom, this is also, you know, if you listen to somebody like Soren Mamdani, you know, answer questions, which he's, you know, has great difficulty doing sometimes, but about, you know, what his vision is for a middle class, and wouldn't it be better if you could, you know, give people the freedom to start a business and to contribute tax revenue to the city, and instead of just looking for, you know, a bailout and giving it to the people who have no stake in any of this at all. And the way he thinks it, and you can tell how he really thinks about a middle class like that, it's not on his radar. There is no room for that in his model for what New York is.
There is, there is,
and I would say it's the same for Chicago. It's the same for Portland.
There's no room for that in
a ton of big cities where they've just decided the middle class is out of here.
There is no room for that in Trump's model, Bezos' model, maybe Obama's model, maybe somebody. They'll talk about it. I'm going to say that if you and I can come back from the future someday, 200 years from now, and if Wikipedia is still around or Webster's is still around, they're going to say middle class was a specific phenomenon to the U.S. and maybe a little bit in Europe from the years 1949 to 1995. And they'll define what it meant and how people in the middle class actually, for a long period of time, 20, 30, 40 years, increased in salaries and other stuff with the same percentage as everybody else, maybe even a little more. That's, unless something dramatic happens, that's never going to happen again. Now, when I say dramatic, I mean we need something like a 29 crash, which I sure as hell don't want. I'll guarantee you that if all of a sudden NVIDIA is trading $25 instead of $200, there would be a middle class because the top class would be so far down, there would be a middle, right? But right now,
wouldn't you give a start date earlier, though, than that to the middle class?
No, right after, it happened after the war. I mean, the middle class started with the GI Bill, basically.
Well, I mean, but I would put it much.
Well, there wasn't any middle class during the Depression.
No, well, there's no. It wasn't that.
Yeah, so I'm saying. No, when do you want to start? By the way, we got to go to break because we should have Nancy on.
I'm on.
What's going to very quick break, Matt, and then we'll come right back.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Round up the usual suspects.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Howe. Matt Byrne on the board. All right, Matt, you got to tell me where that music's from. It's driving me nuts.
It's from the old Star Wars disco theme from the 70s. It's Star Wars Day.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. May the 4th be with you, as they say.
Wow. S&P futures down 850. NASDAQ futures up 14. We were up last night, then we were down, and now we're flat. So it's kind of an odd morning here. We have over in Europe, we have the DAX up 7. Call that flat. The FTSE down 14. Call that one flat. CAC around down 58.7. So most of the new, well, Trump's threatening new auto tariffs, so some of the markets over there, French are down, but Germany's not down. Over in Asia, Nikkei up 228, which is 0.4%. We had Hang Seng up 319, 1%. Shanghai up 4. I don't think these guys are open on Friday, so they're kind of a catch-up. South Korean stocks hit fresh record, building on historic monthly rally in April. I got to check South Korean money supply, see if that's going up. Bonds up 2 base points, 4.40 in the 10-year, so that's creeping a little bit. Oil is actually up 267. That's the Brent up 267 to 110.84. Ours is up 160, 103.51. Our Bob was up 6 cents. Now it's only up a penny, 361. And again, as I filled up yesterday, or I didn't fill up, at 499. It's 499 everywhere. It's 60 cents higher than last week. I mean, just do the math. 361 is the RBOB in New York Harbor. Add like 90% tax, 9 cents tax, 90% tax, and add a little bit for transport and profit, and that's where you are. You're $5, which is right where we are. I mean, the math is pretty easy to do. Gold down $67, 45.76. Silver down $2. That's a big move. 74.30. Foreign exchange. We're right where we've been forever. You're over 117. And the British pound at 135 and change. Crypto up 143, 78,901. Not so sure why that continues to hang in there, but it does. Matt, what do you guys for traffic, weather, sports? Quickly, Cubs win, Sox lose.
Absolutely, yeah. It's currently May 4th, 7:37 a.m. Weather in Chicago, 53 at O'Hare and 52 at Midway this morning. Clear skies this morning at a high of 79 today with lots of sun downtown. Tonight, low of 52, and a likely chance of showers in the Chicagoland area. A chance of showers continues tomorrow as well. In sports, NBA playoffs. Yesterday we saw Magic lose to Pistons 94-116, and the Cavaliers won against Raptors 114-102. Tonight, 76ers play Knicks, and Timberwolves play Spurs. But of course, yesterday, Chicago's MLB teams, Cubs, beat Diamondbacks 8-4. Cubs are 22 wins to 12 losses this season. White Sox, though, lost 3-4 against Padres. Sox are 16 wins to 18 losses this season. Cubs play at Wrigley tonight against Reds. Sox are back as well with the Angels. We'll see them then. All right. Over to you, Chief.
The real quick, Nance, before we get you on here, does the merger in the works today is eBay is supposedly going to be taken over by GameStop. Now, GameStop was one of the meme things that started out as $1.60 in 5/1/2020, traded as high as there's one day here. I'll get the one day. They got up to like $125 within like 2 weeks. And it came flying back down, and the guys, now they've been hanging around in the 25 range. But the stock is, I don't think they're making any money anymore. The stock is one of those, now they claim they're going to want to buy eBay with an all-stock deal. John Nance, who the hell would take GameStop stock for anything? what am I missing here?
Especially eBay.
Yeah, I mean, eBay's still a real company. Anyways, forget about that. Nance, how are you?
Good, how are you?
We're hanging. We're trying to figure out what's wrong. We're trying to figure out what the world's going to look like 10 years from now. Is there going to be a middle class?
Oh, my God. I'm listening to that. I have no idea. Why wouldn't there be?
Well, it depends.
They'll just make one up and put it in.
Well, how big of it? I mean, there's going to be somebody in the middle that makes money in the middle, but it used to be like a huge percentage of society. I don't think it's going to be that.
Well, isn't that kind of what our generation grew up on? I mean...
Yeah, well, that was a while ago.
The middle class grew the country.
Yeah, and now we don't want that anymore. We just want a few people with all the dough. But then again, you know, if you're one of the ones with all the dough, it looks good, right?
No, I don't think so. I think the middle class... I believe the middle class really... in achieving the middle class grew America, and that was the backbone. What's the backbone going to be? Public aid or what? I don't know.
Some people have all the money, and some people on public aid. Sort of like the feudal system in Europe, same thing. You know, I mean, the world's been like that forever, except for the middle class for 30 years, right? For 40? There was no middle class here in the 1890s, was there? Except for maybe farmers.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a small window phenomenon in history, wouldn't you say, Jen?
Yeah, I mean, it used to be you could educate your way into the middle class because it's primarily a white collar job market membership, and you didn't have to be a factory worker or an hourly worker. It gave you prestige. You could keep your hands clean. You could make a lot of money. Now you can't even educate your way into the middle class. Your college degree doesn't give you entitlement to anything.
No. Nance, I have a piece of paper here buried that I could look for in my voluminous, I'll use the term, files. Some group did a study, and I think it was two different time frames. One was like 1948 to 80-something. And they took the five different, bottom 20%, the next 20% of society income-wise. And over that first period, every group went up almost the exact same percentage in terms of their income. And to the point where actually the middle class, the bottom, or like the 20 to 40 group, actually did better than the high-end group. But since then, whatever the cutoff year was, 80-something, since then, almost 90% of the money is in the top 20%, and like 90% of that is in the top 2%. So even you can't even say the top 10 or 20 anymore. It's really the top one or two of those people that have essentially booked all the dough. And it's pretty scary. Anyway, what's going on in your world? You mentioned last time you were on, we've mentioned a few times since then about how taxes have really been a huge thing, and you were agreed with by Maria Pappas saying in the last 30 years taxes are up twice as much as inflation, property taxes in Illinois. So when did 20 years ago, did you even look at taxes when you did a mortgage? You probably did a little bit, but...
Well, I mean, you always did, but it never really was a number that rang out. Now, I got the shock of my life yesterday. I'm financing, somebody I know is trying to buy something in, or talk to, is trying to buy something in Michigan, and this would just be it's a year-round place. I mean, you could be there all year, but it's really, going to be a summer home, strictly for the summer. And it's just a townhome, nothing fancy. $12,000 for the taxes.
Are they considered still an Illinois resident?
Yes.
Michigan absolutely eviscerates you if they think that you. Indiana does not.
Right, Indiana does not. I agree, but I was shocked to see Michigan was actually higher than here.
Well, you know who told me this years ago when he was still mayor? Is Richard J. Daley at the club was complaining to me about he's got a place up in Grand Beach, and he was saying how much if you're from Illinois, how much they absolutely roast you on the taxes, and they know your kids don't go to school there or anything else. That's been the Michigan shtick for quite a while now. Indiana does not do that. But if they know you're from Chicago, your taxes are higher than the guy's next door. It's not even close. How they get away with that, I have no idea. John, how would they? But they do.
Yeah, I don't know. They got to have all sorts of like markers they can find, you know, vehicle registration, stuff like that.
Yeah. No, but that's been away. That's been for a while, Nancy. And by the way, it's on purpose. If they were to sell their place here and move up there, their taxes wouldn't be as high. I don't know how they get away with that, but they do.
Wouldn't we have discrimination laws against? I mean, I'm just saying. We don't do that at all here, do we? We don't discriminate against anybody. We just try to.
What are you talking about? It before they had the when they only issued the tollway passes, the people from Illinois was twice as much. If you're from Montana driving to New York, they charge you because you don't have a tollway pass. The price was twice, right? We always try and screw everybody who's not here. We paid for the stadium by a hotel tax, right? Because they're not from here.
Are we back to the stadium?
Well, but I'm saying
nothing has been decided on the stadium, right?
No, but I'm saying the whole trick is, I mean, John, how far can you go? Don't worry, it's paid for by tourists, not by you. Let's do it. And everybody goes, right. Okay.
Well,
Obama's not as good, too.
Yeah.
I was just very surprised. I mean, I thought, oh, my God, this is worse than here.
Well, do you think that the people in Michigan are all upset for charging people in Illinois more taxes?
No, but it's certain. I mean, someone actually buying a second home up there, okay, is actually contributing to the economy, whether we like it or not.
Well, just think how much they're contributing if they pay twice the tax.
Well, I never thought of it that way. I'm speechless.
Well, get your Illinois hat off and put your Michigan hat on for a second. It all sounds, it's like my question earlier. Would we want the stadium if we got a hot dog stand? And the answer would probably be yes.
Oh, my goodness.
it never changes. It never changes, does it?
No, it's just...
I can see John Flanagan serving up beers at $15 a throw, thinking it's the world's greatest idea.
I'll be drinking your profits.
God.
I could see your brother doing that. That's the guy.
What was the Jimmy just came back to the Cub, and what did he say? A beer from the vendor now is $15, and or four hot dogs, $50.
Something like that. Four hot dogs was $40, $9.99.
Wow, then you got to give him a tip.
We're at Wrigley.
At Wrigley, if you buy it from the guy in the vendors in the stands, hot dogs are $9.99. Beers are $15.99.
Wow.
Wine coolers or the vodka spritzers are $16.99. They're cheaper downstairs, but if you want to leave your seats, you know, and then you go to the bars and, you know, beers run about $13. So you're saving yourself, you know, most people are thinking, I'm saving myself $2 now. If you go to anywhere outside of Wrigley, beers are probably $11 to $10.
Well, plus my brother said you got to pass your. They won't take cash. You got to press your credit card down the aisle. Yes. When the guy gets your credit card, the guy writes a tip in for himself.
No, he'll ask you.
Oh, this guy said he was way in the middle. The guy just put it on there. He never asked him.
I'm sure that does occur, but I'm not that. I'm closer to it, so he asks how much of a tip do you want. I normally tip them in cash, and then they show up more. Frequently, you know.
God.
They'll take your credit card. They don't take cash, but if you tip them in cash.
Oh, sure.
No, yeah. You can tip them in cash, but you can't pay for anything in cash. It is a very strange thing.
No, you're from Chicago. You know how it works.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's no different. I mean, think about in baseball. It's... that odd thing that you could pass a 20 down the line and get a beer back and change. No one would steal from you. Now the only difference is it's a credit card. Now, you know, if Chief or someone had a little swiper, they could get your number and then, you know, do that. But I haven't seen it. But normally I see a lot of people tip the guys in cash because I don't know how they get paid out. If they get paid out at the end of the game or they get paid out at the end of the week when all the receipts are done, I have no idea.
Well, way back in the day, they would buy the case of beer from the place and then went out and sold it. Now I think it's right. All part of the place is all, it's all intertwined. They're like employees almost.
Right.
I believe that's correct, yes.
Like at one time, I went to the – I had to go to the Sox game. It was 2 years ago. Nance and I pull up. It's so bizarre. There's nobody there. I mean, literally nobody there. So Larry used to have a parking pass in the good lot, so I know how to get there. I sneak up Canal Street. And the gate you normally go in is closed. There's nobody around. So they got all these cones. They make me drive all around the block and all stuff. So I'm right back to a gate that's now probably 100 yards away. I said to the guy, why is the other gate closed? And he goes, well, because of the traffic. I go, what traffic? There's nobody here. So the guy goes, well, it's $30 to park, which is a little rich. And I go, all right, so I hand the guy $30. Oh, no, you can't do that. What do you mean? I only take credit cards. I said, you got to be bleeping me. So I have to put my American Express card in. The guy is in one of these. If ever you want to cheat on credit cards, those little things that you shove them in there is the easiest way to steal your number, right? It was this huge line. I was the fourth car. There was nobody there.
You were probably the fourth car when the game got done, too.
No, I was two cars left when the game got... Well, the game got rained out.
Unbelievable.
Get a load of this. This is the honest to God's truth. I'm listening to radio, and it's bright sun. And they go, well, there's this thunderstorm coming through like Huntley, Illinois, which is way the hell west. You know, it probably won't even hit the city. Okay. So this guy had his 80th birthday, so it's in a skybox. I go upstairs. There's nobody there. Half the skyboxes are empty. I find everybody getting in. We're all BS. And the guys are out in the field warming up and all this stuff. All of a sudden, the guy comes up to bat. I mean, literally to bat. He gets two strikes on him. The heavens open up to the point where they couldn't get the tarp down before there were puddles on the infield. It never stopped raining for like six innings. Well, not, they called the game like 2.5 hours later. And I walked out, and there were two cars left. And all the gates were shut. I couldn't find my way out of there. Finally, some guy who was a regular knew the one gate that was open. I followed him out of the place. I'd still be there. This is the most bizarre night I think I've ever spent. I mean, they couldn't give the guy $30. And the weird part is they bought the skybox for that night. Now you had some booze and food in there, so I don't think you're getting that. I don't think they ever gave him the skybox back. They never had a redo. That at least that I was invited to. Maybe they didn't invite me. I don't know. It was totally bizarre, but I never saw the first batter get into the batter's box, take two pitches, the heavens open up, and the game never come back again. That's how they even got surprised by the storm with all the radar and everything you have these days. Anyway, so what are mortgage rates? What are you seeing? What's going on?
Well, every day it's just up and down like crazy. It could change, you know, every 15 minutes, because the more news that comes out, it's just changing rapidly. So all I can say is, like, right now, I think we're going to go maybe into a little bit of a dead zone, and then we'll just pop out of it. People are looking, and there's a shortage of properties, but the people who really want it are doing it. Refinancing is kind of back to being dead, but people are starting to at least call and saying that they, you know, are beginning to have to do it. So, you know, the rates are in the sixes right now. They were headed towards the fives, but since Iran, no. And we'll just have to wait and see what happens.
Well, it's 30.
Now we're going to start escorting the ships through today. Maybe the stock market will like that. The stock market, usually it's the indicator of what's going to happen in the mortgage market.
Well, you're pushing 5%. We're 4.97 in the 30-year, and we're pushing 4.4 in the 10-year. We're 4.394. they seem to be relentlessly creeping up, and then all of a sudden they'll drop back down a day, which I suspect maybe the Fed buying, but maybe not. But I mean, it looks like they're doing the creep here. I mean, you know, the more the Fed gets in debt, you know, the more they have to go out and borrow, which, duh, raises the rates, right? But
well, before the Iran bombing, we were at 3.97.
In a 10-year, yeah.
Yeah, so that was just, what, 6 weeks ago?
Well, let me check out. By the way, if you want the 10-year, the 10-year is TNX. 30-year is TYX. We were at, we were 3.4 on April 3rd. You're right.
I mean, we were really headed in the right direction. So, they would have gone down. The prediction was they were going to go down. They were going to go down, and then everybody waited. So you've got these crowds of people that are still waiting, but maybe they're more active right now. It just depends where this all goes.
Well, what price level? If you get your last 10 people, are they the people that Odd's dealing with, or are they kind of, I'll say, middle-aged to older people, like trading houses, trading up, trading down, or are you getting new buyers, or what are you getting?
I'm getting mainly baby boomers going into their final place, and a lot of them just want ranches or something on that scale, at least a bedroom on the first floor, whatever they're looking at.
So people who are 80 years old don't want the spiral staircase?
No, they don't. And not unless it comes with an elevator. And then Odd is getting buyers that are just paying cash. So, but these people are going to have to sell their homes. So it's going to be interesting to see what really happens at the end. But it's still going to be in the sixes, and people just aren't used to that. That's all.
Plus the taxes. Is the insurance a factor or no?
Oh, my gosh. Illinois, it's just been announced by State Farm that Illinois had the worst wheel lead in wind, hail, tornadoes. If you take California, Florida, and New York out of the picture, so out of the 47 states, we are the leader. And because of all the payouts in Illinois for those three things, besides the car damages that are going on from it, the prices of homes have really gone up.
When did Jan, you might know, or Jimmy, the weather history, but you know, for a long time, this is when I was trading the pit. Until the, what was the name of the hurricane that whacked into Charlotte? Was that Hugo? What was that?
Yeah, it was Hugo.
Up until that hurricane, the single biggest, and even the one in Homestead, those houses weren't worth anything, sorry to say. I think the single biggest insurance claim, I could be wrong on this, was some massive hailstorm in Orlando where they had a fix or total something like 300,000 cars or some unimaginable number. So hail has always been kind of a problem other places. Lou says it happens in Denver all the time where people get cars. And I'll see cars on the internet that say they have a hail damage title, you know, which is bizarre. But it never really happened. I never saw that happen in Illinois, but yet that area where Audrey lives had this hailstorm 2 years ago. Was it 3 years ago, Nance, where it basically ripped all the buds off all the trees. She didn't have any pears that year. But the damage to all the roofs within maybe a 3 or 4 square mile area was dramatic.